Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, July 29th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The organized village of Cake is a small tribal community on the northwest side of Kuprianoff Island. Like many villages this time of year, they just hosted a culture camp, a week of teaching native youth about traditional food gathering and processing. But during this week of hunting, smoking, and canning, there are a few bigger health issues being addressed, too. KCAW's Eric Newman reports.
My name is Kaush. That's my Tlingit name. My Haida name is Iljawas. And my IRS name is Michael Jackson.
Mike Jackson is an imposing man who speaks slowly and thoughtfully. He doesn't show much body language so that you can't really tell what he's thinking sometimes. Jackson was born in Cake and lived here for most of his life. In town, he's the magistrate judge. But on this day, he's at a beach, helping supervise 24 middle and high school kids at the Cake Culture Camp.
Now, the benefits of, say, seal. The oils are good for us. Blueberries is very, very good for us, as well as salmon berries, huckleberries. If you want to keep me talking, here are beach greens. You can eat that right here.
Jackson helped found the camp 25 years ago. During their week-long stay, kids learned how to make Devil's Club tea and to dress seal and bear. During the time I was there, I ate dog salmon eggs and seaweed and smoked hooligan, little fish where you eat everything, from head to tail. Cake's camp centers around food, but there's also a larger issue.
We led the state in suicides, the state led the nation in suicides, so where did that put us? It put us at the top of a pyramid.
In the 1980s, Cake had the most suicides in America, particularly youth suicides. That's when Jackson and others decided to start the culture camp. Since then, many kids have participated.
My name is Nikki Friday. I've been coming to culture camp all my life. I've been coming here since kindergarten, because that's the youngest I could get. I've been coming since then, and I've never missed a year.
Friday is 17. He looks like a typical high schooler who's into the arts. He has bleached hair, and he likes theater and music. He wants to become an actor.
Most of the times I like to act, put on some small plays, get some people, get a little theater stage going on.
He's one of 24 campers here. I asked Friday what his favorite thing is so far.
Getting the fish, cutting them open, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Just basically cutting the ribs off of the bones.
Yep.
Or the meat.
Filet them up, put them in the smokehouse. We've mainly worked on pinks, a couple of kings and halibut, coho.
Food prices are high here, and there's significant unemployment, making life difficult for many in Cake. But the real reason for the camp is to rebuild the native culture and traditions of residents here. Martha Pearson is a health program manager with the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, SEARCH.
The culture camp does operate on one level, which is just, hey, here's how we, you know, smoke salmon, here's how we gather berries, and we're going to eat these great foods for this whole week, and that's going to be healthy. That's one level. I think the deeper and more sustainable level is, I keep coming upon the word resiliency. The residents report that there have been no suicides in the village since the culture camp began.
I double-checked with Mike Jackson, and it was 22 years since the last suicide. So within a few years, Cake went from the most suicides in the country to none. Jackson stresses that this is the main benefit of camp, among many.
We're trying to encourage them even more to get back to the natural foods because of the diabetes issues that's going on throughout the U.S. with Native Americans. And if we can make that them more aware, that's our culture camp. But we will never sleep on any idea of saying that we're going away from suicide prevention. Our first priority out here is suicide prevention.
And Nikki Friday, he's looking to the future.
I am going to go to college in New York.
He says he's not totally sure how the lessons from culture camp will translate to life in the city. But making that transition might just be enough. Reporting in Cake, I'm Eric Newman.
This spring, a team of geologists went fossil hunting on Gravina Island and returned victorious. They came across fossil beds that contain what they've identified as ichthyosaur bones. KRBD's Layla Carey talked to some of the team members and has this report.
Whatever you do, don't call them dinosaurs. If you do, a geologist will quickly correct you.
Yeah, it's not a dinosaur, it's a marine reptile.
That's U.S. Forest Service geologist Jim Bachtel. In May, he went to Gravina Island with University of Alaska Fairbanks geologists Patrick Druckenmiller and Kevin May and Ketchikan artist Ray Troll to look for some of these Triassic-age marine reptiles. They found some, and Bachtel's gone back a couple times since then to collect the fossils, package them up, and send them north for further study. Druckenmiller says Southeast Alaska has fascinating geology, including piles of rocks from the Triassic period. They form from sediment that originally was on the sea floor. Swimming above that sediment were marine reptiles.
And these animals were swimming around these islands way out in the Pacific Ocean and occasionally dying, and their bones settled to the sea floor. And, you know, over millions of years, these rocks have eventually been traveled northwards and become part of what's now Southeast Alaska.
Here's Troll explaining further how a tropical creature ended up as a fossil in Alaska.
You have to think of the Pacific Ocean as like a conveyor belt of rock that keeps hitting and it subducts. It actually goes under and it comes back around. And it's a really, it's a pretty mind-blowing thing. But Southeast Alaska is just a whole big jumble of this stuff. It's all these terrains is what they're called. And actually, the geological joke is this is the Southeast Alaskan terrain wreck. Drum roll, please.
Ichthyosaurs have been found on Gravina previously, and Druckenmiller says that's partly why they knew the rocks on Gravina might hold more. Basically, they went in and mapped the area previously to determine the age of the rocks. Once you have that, you know whether there's a potential for fossils.
What we usually find happens, you go and look in these places, and basically you find nothing. But the potential is there, and every so often, you know, you strike it rich and you find something really cool. So that was kind of the goal of this trip, was to see, to check out areas that had never been walked before by vertebrate paleontologists to see if we could find some vertebrate fossils.
And they did. Ichthyosaurs, which Druckenmiller says is the reptilian version of a dolphin or a whale.
Some of those bones were large enough to be from a group of ichthyosaurs we call shastasaurs or shonasaurs. And these are the largest marine reptiles that ever lived on the planet.
So just how cool is this?
This is cool.
Here's Bachtel again.
We don't have those great sexy dinosaurs that they have down south. We don't have the T-Rex and the Apatosaurus and the duck-billed dinosaurs and all of these other things. But we've got really, really neat marine reptiles.
Bachtel says they're done collecting the really neat fossils for now, but there's more out there, and he asked the public to leave fossils in place if they stumble across any. He advises that amateur fossil hunters take photos, get GPS coordinates if possible, and then contact him or another geologist with the information.
Leave them in place and don't try to remove them, because they just, by chipping them out of the rock, they'll shatter and break, and it takes specialized tools and stuff to get them out.
It should also be noted that vertebrate fossil remains are a protected public resource, and it's illegal to disturb them without permits. But the geologists and citizen scientist Troll understand the temptation.
It's a mystery, you know, it's the hunt, it's the quest to understand. So, just plain fun.
The bones of these really cool Southeast Alaska not dinosaurs, or a really good copy of them, might come back home someday. At least Bachtel hopes that will be the case.
So that we can share these finds with the public and our youth and conjure up ideas and visions of Triassic seas and the wonderment that comes along with dinosaurs down south, but with our much, much superior Triassic marine reptiles here.
In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The National Park Service and Aramac are negotiating a 2-year extension for a concession contract at Glacier Bay Lodge. Aramac and Huna Totem Corporation, in a joint venture, hold the current 10-year concession contract, which expires at the end of this year. Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve put out a prospectus for a new concession contract in January, but received no bids. Now Glacier Bay National Park Superintendent Susan Beaudreau says the park and Aramac are looking for an agreement that provides a business opportunity for the company and protects taxpayers' interest.
I'm very hopeful that a resolution will soon be forthcoming. Absolutely. The conversations remain fruitful and constructive.
Beaudreau says contracts talks have only been with Aramark. Huntotum CEO Larry Gaffney says the corporation will remain a joint venture partner if a two-year contract is negotiated, but Aramark says it's taking the lead on discussions with the national park. Glacier Bay Lodge contains 56 rooms, which account for about half the rooms available in all of Gustavus, a town of 450 residents. During an Energy and Natural Resources Committee hearing Thursday, Senator Lisa Murkowski pushed the National Parks Director, John Jarvis, for a resolution.
The people of Gustavus are notably anxious and stressed. If the concession doesn't move forward, you really do have a situation where the town's economy is threatened.
Beaudreau says a two-year contract extension will make it possible for the lodge to stay open for 2014 and 2015 and allow the park to conduct a feasibility study on putting out a new 10-year prospectus. A recall effort against 7 of 8 Ketchikan Indian Council members has failed. The number of collected signatures for recall didn't meet several thresholds. The Ketchikan Indian Community Group, which spurred the recall effort, alleged the 7 tribal members violated the tribe's constitution when they voted in late May to temporarily appoint the tribal council president, Irene Dundas, to act as CEO. Dundas held the position briefly. The group also alleged that Dundas acted improperly when she fired the tribal human resources director at the direction of the council. Recall committee co-chair Martha Johnson says this doesn't disprove the misconduct charges. It only means they didn't get the necessary number of signatures. And that's all for Raven News. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka.